shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello and welcome to the very first 2019 edition of Kill Shuffle.
Yes, I'm Dylan.
I'm Donald, but it's a brand new year.
Yes.
Same us.
Yes. Old music.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a little bit too early for there to be any new releases, but we are still going to cover quite a bit this week. We've got old releases from Foxing, Fox Jaw, Fox Capture Plan, and that's it for the Fox bands. AFI.
C2I.
C2I, yes. Yeah. And we're also going to take a look back at an album from 1997 called Free Mars by a supergroup called Lusk. Mm. So plenty to be getting on with. Dill, did you have a nice Christmas?
I did. I was quite looking forward to this music.
Yeah, me too. It was nice. It was actually nice to get back into the rhythm of reviewing stuff.
Enjoying the music in our free time.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, because it got pretty serious there for a while with our top 20s of the year.
Yeah.
Having to go back through, you know, 60 plus albums and figure out what I wanted in my top 20. I think it was big. I really enjoyed that show.
I did. I think the best way to take the edge off of that was to listen to the top 20 playlist, which we made.
Most definitely,
yeah. It shuffles everything.
Yeah, just picking out some of the best songs of the year. And actually, we'll have another conversation about that because I think I've discovered possibly one of the best songs of 2018, very late in the day. But this is sort of the week. We did one last year as well in 2017. It's kind of the week where we pick up on releases that we overlooked or we never got a chance to talk about, or bands that we kind of discovered just during that Christmas break period. One band, the band we're going to start with, is Foxing from St. Louis in Missouri. So this was an album. The album's called Nearer My God. This is an album that I actually did listen to when it came out during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Did you check it out back then?
No, I didn't know it was a thing.
No, right, yeah. So it really breezed past me. It got some little bit of press, and I listened to it once, I think, or maybe got maybe three quarters of the way through and went, not for me. And actually, everybody says their top 20, it's not just us. It was number one on two guys whose opinion I really respect on their lists. First one is Kill Shovel superfan Brad Thorne, lovely guy, and he's got great taste in music. So it was his number one. He was a guest on a podcast called Bitch and Brew, and that was his number one record of the year, and also on Renfrew Deadman's Riot Act podcast, it was his number one album of the year. So that kind of made me go, right, well, what did I miss here? Like, you know, why didn't it resonate with me the first time I heard it? So I went back and listened to it, and
same thing happened to me, and I think the same thing we're about to see happened as well to me.
Okay,
so let's go on.
That's super interesting. Okay. I'm going to go on about this album in a little bit. So, yeah, can you explain to me? So you were going into it for the first time.
Yes.
First impressions weren't great, or?
They were kind of, I heard, well, my mind usually picks up what it sounds like first. Mm-hmm. Like what other bands it sounds
like.
Yeah,
of course.
Like if it doesn't, then it's a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's how music is. It's saturated.
Yeah.
Oversaturated. But second time around, I started to pick up on things that only they have done, and things that make this band actually a pretty unique little gem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes it hard. I think that's what makes it hard to get into.
And the second time, with guided patience, it really branched out. So, yeah, that's what happened to me.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I think you hit the nail on the head there, definitely. It's when you go in on the mindset of trying to fit it or pigeonhole it into a certain sound, or you just want a comfortable pair of shoes that you can listen to in the background, that's not what this album is. It very much sits in a like pop sonic space, but it's so progressive in so many ways, and it pulls in elements from so many genres. I mean, I literally have R&B, post-punk, math rock, pop, obviously. There's kind of this theatrical edge to a lot of it. Modern, really well produced indie, the kind of stuff that wins Mercury prizes. There's a lot of that in there.
I think that's the main toe tipping part that caught everybody's attention.
Yeah,
because you see that first, and then you see all the weird shit that's around it. The right. Giraffe Tongue Orchestra, the Everything Everything, the...
Oh, yeah, Everything Everything for sure.
Freaking TV on the Radio.
Yep.
I'm not sure if... Here, I'm not sure if the singer is related at all to any of the singers on those albums, but I find a commonality with that kind of voice.
Yeah, there's a commonality with the kind of voice, but I think Conor Murphy has a very unique sound, and he's super versatile as well. Like Jonathan Higgs from Everything Everything, he has a falsetto that he relies on, I'd say, about half the time.
Yes.
And then the rest of the time, it goes all over the place. He's got a lovely kind of smoky singing voice that he can... you know, bust out for a lot of the songs. Then yeah. He really has a rasp and a grit to it when it needs it. He can do the cathartic primal scream that you kind of need sometimes on these tracks. And he can just take it from 0 to 10 in an instant, which is
amazing. It suits
amazing.
The moments.
Yeah.
And the moments are very kind of... they're not far and few between, but they're used very well.
I think what defines a moment slowly... goes into relief the more you listen to the album. You know, I think the really standout moments from the very start that you kind of go, this is iconic, like these are the songs that anchor you to the record, is probably the opener, Grand Paradise.
Yes. And then later on for me, was it Lich Prince?
Lich Prince. Lich Prince. Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge.
Because that one starts as you expect it to, in that sort of Imagine Dragons, mm-hmm. but with real sounding guitars. But then when it morphs into this face melter of a guitar solo, yes. that's when you think, okay, well, these guys have something really unique.
Yeah, with these earth shattering drums.
Yes.
And my God, they made an impression.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And then Nearer My God, which the first time you listen to it, I think is really the thing that hooks onto your brain. It's just got this really excellent hook. In the middle, you know, that, you know, do you want me at all? Does anybody want me at all? And it's something that appears in that opening track, Grand Paradise, that near My God, and also in the closer, Lambert. There's a real sense of desperation in the way that Conor Murphy sings that really appeals to me.
Yeah,
it sounds like he's like a guy that's got nothing left to lose, and he just sings with so much. He's singing like it's the last time he's ever going to sing.
Much reckless abandon, but yeah. It's not reckless. It's very well.
It's very
controlled.
Finely tuned. What's the lyric? It's like, I'll be your dog, I'll be a darling for you, or anybody who wants me at all. Like, that's... It really just showcases somebody at their absolute lowest ebb to say, like, I crave approval so badly that I will just take it from anybody.
Yeah.
The lyrics across this album, actually, you hear them more and more the more times you listen to it, and there's some really lovely little turns of phrase.
Yeah, pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Great stuff.
I never thought I could imagine myself screaming, I feel like a houseplant at the top of my lungs, like it was the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
But that's a lyric on one of the songs. I think it is...
But this album does a few really interesting things vocally. Like some of the songs, of course, like Lich Prince, have these backing vocals that kind of are weird and swirl around the actual vocals.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you notice that. If it's just synth...
I think it's that vocoder thing.
Yeah, it's just... It makes the song so much fuller in the vocal department.
Definitely.
When it's just one guy, there's a whole lot more around that.
And that's a technique that can be misused a little bit in modern pop music, but it's done with a lightness of touch here, and it's done, I think, in the correct proportion that it works really, really well.
Like Arcane Roots, I think, comes to mind. Their self-control with... when they get heavy and how heavy they are even in the light parts.
Yeah, Arcane Roots is a great shout, especially how they approach Melancholia Hymns, the last album.
Yeah, that's the familiar point.
Because of how much pop music there is on it, and at the same time, you know, it can kick into fifth gear when it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And this definitely does, you know, the end of Nearer My God. Another, probably the best emotional payoff on the album is... when everything crashes in Lambert, the last song.
Yes, and it certainly does.
Oh my God, it's
like, if you had any doubts about the album, at least that song will capture you at the end.
Yeah, that song has kind of moved me to tears a couple of times.
It comes very suddenly, but it's not at the start.
No,
half the song is balls to the wall.
Yeah.
epic.
It's like it's like a build up, and then it's like this perfect explosion of emotion. That part is definitely reminiscent of White Lies or Editors or something, but it's way more frantic. You know, the guitar, the lead guitar is just this screaming, really catchy line, and then the drums are just constant fill.
Post-punk, mechanical.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's absolutely brilliant. And then that's the desperation again, that, you know, Heaven Won't Take Me In, the way he sings that is just so fraught. I love it. It's great.
Very ghosty feelings.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And then we haven't even mentioned, I mean, I think Crown Candy and Game Shark are kind of a piece insofar as they both sound quite... almost vaudeville or something.
I do
there's almost like a spy movie meets like a spy movie bar mitzvah vibe to Game Shark, I think, which you would have got a little bit in the early 2000s with bands like Panic at the Disco.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of had a carnival vibe to them a little bit.
Vaudeville-esque.
Did you ever listen to I know I brought Imogen Heap to the show. You ever listen to Ellipse by Imogen Heap?
Oh, yeah.
The album, you know, la 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 la. You know that song, Aha?
It's a trip.
That song really reminds me of Aha by Imogen Heap, if you kind of listen to the two of them. But that's because they both have a real, that kind of high energy, circus vibe to them. But it's fun. It's a fun little track. And same goes for Crown Candy, which has a huge amount of Carpenters lyrics in it, which I appreciate as a big Carpenters fan.
Yeah,
there's like the Kiss for Luck and We're On Our Way, we've only just begun, like they kind of reference that in a song about why you shouldn't waste your life on religion. Like, it's all about Pascal's Wager and you know, taking the gamble on God being real, which is pretty deep for this ostensibly sort of pop / indie rock / R&B album
that don't necessarily talk about typical pop things.
Exactly. And then another song that I love, I just love the lyrical content, is Trapped in Dillard's, because it's really kind of seems to be a song about a guy that gets stuck at a department store after it closes. And he's just talking about walking through the aisles and seeing all the celebrity perfume on the shelves, and he bumps into an ex, I think. And
it just sounds pretty accurate to a actual event.
Yeah.
I wonder. Yeah.
And the music is this kind of loungy jazz piano.
Yeah.
With these just adorable electronic squeaks.
Yeah, they're nice. They kind of appear at the first song as well.
They do, yeah.
Which I found really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. The
muse.
Start of Grand Paradise, yeah. This is a great, it's instantly recognized. I love albums that do that. They just instantly suck you into the world of, you know, the next hour.
Yeah.
And that's what Grand Paradise does.
This is something a little new.
Definitely, yeah. Do you know something? It kind of reminded me, not necessarily from a sonic perspective, but just the actual eclecticism and the approach, quite reminded me of Grace by Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't care. It's for him there. For Jeff, it seems like it was all about the song and taking you to whatever place that the song needed to go. And I think this band do a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really, they're very, very difficult to put in a genre because they just want to express one idea per song, and then you get, you know, it does cohese into an album, but it's not in the typical sense.
No, the ebb and flow is quite different.
Yeah. I was shocked that these guys aren't English. I don't know why, but
well,
it's hard. You don't hear American music like this very often.
No, and I expected, I'm not sure if TV and Radio are English.
I think TV and Radio might be another American band that sound like they should probably be English, but yeah.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of the, especially the indie touch zones I was getting from this, like the Antlers and London Grammar, Foals, Wild Beasts, I think most of the references I felt were British.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's all done like what we say with all the Melbourne bands, and what we say with sometimes with Japanese bands, is it's nice to hear a familiar style, or you know, like this is, as I say, like a sensibly sort of pop R&B indie, like those styles, but filtered through a slightly more obscure place, you know, like Missouri. It's not necessarily a musical destination that you constantly think about, you know. Same goes with like that 2000s indie filtered through Melbourne, like we talked about with Rolling Blackouts. That this is, it's that kind of odd pop filtered through Missouri.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it's so much more interesting than a lot of those English bands, even though it's doing something.
Yeah, it's like the reverse for excerpts, with them sounding more American.
Oh, yeah.
Purely English.
Scottish, actually, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, it's them doing Heartland Rock. They're sort of taking the struggles of the blue-collar American worker, but filtering them through their own issues and daily life as Scots people. But yeah, I absolutely love this. Needless to say, I listened to it. I think it wound up my number 10 most listened album of the year, even though I only discovered it on, like, December 21st or something, so that just goes to show.
Yeah, it takes a good few days eating this up.
It's stunning. It's really stunning.
It is. I need to grow into it a lot more as well, because it's not exactly what I love, but I think I can grow to love it.
But I think it's I think it makes time for you, if that makes sense. It's not necessarily like, do you know the way when we talk about some of that sort of 90s post-hardcore sound, and I just go, yep, anything that sounds like this, it's my bag. Whereas I think with Foxing, it's more, they seduced me into their style.
Yeah, I'm sure you like this a lot more than me. I'd always assume you like everything, and
I do. Yeah, and I do like a lot of those bands that I mentioned. Yeah. The English, the kind of Mercury Prize hogs.
Yes,
I do like a lot of that stuff, definitely. Yeah. But I think this has, none of those bands would be at Arctangent. This band was at Arctangent. You know,
yes.
This band take if not the sound, the philosophy of kind of math rock to, and if you listen to their older albums, it's really interesting because they're totally different again.
Oh, I'll be curious.
They're much more in the post rock vein, especially the first one. Second one kind of more emo, but this is something different entirely.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, but in any case, I just really wanted to bring it to the show because I just thought it was, I think it was an album that maybe got overlooked by a lot of people. Obviously, two in particular did not overlook it, but I wanted to just give it a shout out as well. So that's Nearer My God by Foxing. My favorite track is probably the title track.
Oh, nice. Good one. Mine's probably, yes, Lich Prince.
Lich Prince, yeah, that is a really good song.
You giving this an 8?
I'm going to give it I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it close. A 9. I absolutely adore it, but I've only had it for a couple of weeks.
It's still got a few, you know, Mercury Prize elements. I'm like, okay.
Oh yeah, no, I absolutely adore it. I adore it.
Yes,
but you know, but you gotta be. It's amazing. It is amazing. So that's Foxing, Nearer My God. Staying with the theme of foxes, why don't we talk about Fox Capture Plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Please, they're. Oh, let's get started with.
I get the sense that this is a band that you've been wanting to take to the show for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, the time it came out, I was like, oh shit, we missed a window because we had so much out. Oh,
okay.
And I had seen them in Japan.
You've seen them live?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Playing on a beach. It was fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm jealous.
We're kind of just an area near the beach at the Summer Sonic Festival.
Okay.
But it was perfect.
Yeah.
It was the exact environment you'd want to hear this kind of music.
Yep.
This kind of music is, we've kind of covered this genre before.
Yeah, only once, and even then I would say like the connection is a little tenuous. Talking about Mouse on the Keys?
Yeah. This is more the dance piano jazz variants of what we've seen.
They call themselves a jazz rock trio. That's how they describe themselves. Mm-hmm. I would say that that's partly true. They have like the core unit of the band is piano, drums and like upright double bass.
Mm.
But they bring in strings on almost every track.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of synthesizer. It's a much more, I would say, lush, filled out sound than you might necessarily expect just hearing that it's a jazz trio.
Yeah.
And even the genres they dip into, it's not just jazz and math rock, which is kind of where Mouse and the Key sits. There's a lot of pop, a lot of video game soundtrack stuff.
Yeah.
And little bits of hip hop as well.
It's always what I thought of, like, what if bebop did drum and bass at points?
Mm.
There's a bit of that going on with the drums.
It's super organic.
Yeah, it's really fluid.
Yeah.
For the most part, this does a lot of weird turns, though, which is why I thought it was so interesting. Like, We're a confidence man.
Yeah. That's like straight out of a 1920s speakeasy, that song.
Yeah, which I always thought was We Are Confident Men, but in fact, that's not at all
it is. It's just typical, like, Google Translate. Yeah. Like, we are confidence men.
Maybe it's a statement towards the man.
Yeah, maybe.
Except without the comma.
Without the comma, yeah. In any case, that is just a shamelessly old school swing track, and
I
love
it's really cool swing, and there's little bits of that which I really like.
Oh yeah, that one sticks out, and it only works because it is so well written. Like, that's the kind of genre that it can descend into parody so easily, but they are
electro,
so good.
Electro bounce kind of.
Yeah. Mm. It's like electro swing without the electro. It's just swing. Like, that's
far better.
It's so old school, but everything on this album is just produced to absolute pristine perfection.
From like the start to the finish. I think the book ended very nicely with Paradigm Shift and Capturism.
Yeah, the title track, yeah, Capturism is the name of the album. Yeah, the first track, it definitely sits you in that mouse on the keys space early, just because it doesn't necessarily stay there, but no. That first like that's it's got that sort of frantic piano and drums and the weird 7/4 time signature that you kind of think, okay, that these guys are obviously in the same sort of genre and musical space as Mouse on the Keys, but then it branches
it breaks
out
pretty
so
fast.
Quickly. It branches off so fast. Because Greatest Blue most reminds me of the building theme from The Sims.
Oh yeah,
I just felt like I was building my house at the start, and then of course it's like there's a little bit of F-Zero. There's a massive
Dynasty Warriors
or whatever. It's very soundtracky, and then there's a 3-minute like double bass solo that you just obviously is again totally unique proposition. Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, those extra instruments are utilized really well.
Yeah,
to build the sound.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they're throughout really. Part of me would wonder what would happen if they got a brass section too, because the strings are used so well in this album.
It would be huge.
Yeah, it would be.
Kind of like what Light have done recently with the trumpet and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's such a classy album.
It is.
It's just classy from start to finish.
For a band that cranks one out a year.
Yeah, and it seems super prolific.
Yeah, and they released, a B-sides album recently? B-sides soundtrack-y stuff.
I was wondering what that was, because it seemed like too many songs to be just a regular.
Mm-hmm.
So that means these guys are probably ones to keep our eye on.
Yeah,
For this year. Mm-hmm. If you like to air drum, this is the album for you, because the drums are, as I say, like they're totally pristine sonically, but they're just really great. Like they're kind of groovy when they need to be, they're in the pocket, they're totally frantic.
Yeah,
it's really everything that you could want as a fan of the drums is on this album.
And they've also like utilized in their skill set, they've utilized like they've done covers in the past.
Are they?
Full cover album with like Born Slippy and songs like that.
Oh gosh, okay. Yeah. Right, gotcha.
Right Here, Right Now, Basket Case, Tonight.
I'll have to.
Buddy Holly.
Oh my God, I'll have to listen to that. What's it called? Covering?
Cover Mind.
Yeah. All right, very good, very good.
But yeah.
Yeah. And
they do a lot with very little.
They do a lot. They really, really do a lot. And it doesn't sound like, I think there's enough of, do you remember my issue with the Snail's House record? Like, and I liked it, but that it was kind of sat a little bit too much in that kind of hopeful, like, determination space, put it that way, right? Whereas this one, it's always throwing something new at you. Mm. It's not scattergun or confused in its tone, but it's always throwing something. Like, that track, Interlude.
Is an interlude.
It's full length, but
yeah.
But it's a chance for them to really fuck around with, you know, like phasers and weird tremolo effects and chopped and screwed piano parts.
Yeah, it's kind of a modal song that doesn't go anywhere, but it makes room for the next part.
But in the same way that it creeps you out a little bit, like Aphex Twin does at the best of times.
Oh yeah, there's a bit of that in here as well.
Yeah, and that's not something I expected here. Actually, it really reminded me of some of the stuff on the first Streets album, that kind of garage, like the rolling piano line that you kind of get on, that's quite easy to rap over. And then it goes into that Mad Sympathy, which is kind of, I would say, probably the centerpiece.
Frantic, but very chill.
Yeah, because it's built around like a marimba line, basically. Yeah. And then it pulls on all of the genres that they've established in the albums at that point really, mm-hmm. really well. It's like, Mad Sympathy is probably a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, if not Paradigm Shift, maybe.
I like Paradigm Shift. I don't feel like it does anything stronger than other tracks on the album do, but it is a good starting off point.
Yeah, for an ending point.
Yeah, right.
Gold song to end.
Yeah, it is very good. It is very, very good. Yeah, and then they veer back into rock, like, you know, jazz rock, quote unquote, on Liberation, because that's the one that has a little bit of overdriven a synthesizer, and it definitely has the ferocity of a rock track, whereas a lot of these are much poppier.
Feels more like Light at points.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of songs out here that don't really have much of a jazz element to them. They're really just instrumental pop tracks. Like Because of You.
Yeah, it really is.
It's like a grand love theme.
Yeah.
In the style of one of the great Japanese piano masters, Ryuichi Sakamoto or Joe Hisaishi. Those kind of really memorable themes that you hear in a lot of what's well, just Miyazaki films and things. Yeah,
and just kind of modern day pop idol
meets stuff. meets
solo pop idol stuff. So like, yeah, it's cool.
It's great, and but with piano replacing the lead vocal.
Yeah,
thoroughly enjoyable record, Dylan.
Quite a surprise, I thought.
I just couldn't see anybody putting this on and not having a good time. I don't think it overstays its welcome. There's enough variety on here to justify the 46, 47 minutes it runs for.
Yeah, and for where like the Mouse and the Keys album we covered was more of an introspective, dark wash, this is more floaty and
yay. Yeah, it's
good points.
I think this is definitely a more, it's more of a sugar rush of an album than the Mouse and the Keys one. I'm not sure. I think I like them both equally, to be honest
with
you.
Apples and oranges.
Apples and oranges. They are very different. Is it actually funny that there is one? So, do you know Dark Lights? You remember Dark Lights on Mouse and the Keys? Da 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 da. That song. Overdrive has a very similar piano line reminds me of Dark Lights, but it goes into a different place then. Yeah. So. There's no plagiarism.
They're obviously connected and aware of each other.
They must be.
Being in the same genre in Japan.
Yeah, they must be. Yeah. They must be.
A niche genre at that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Jazz produced like math rock.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely jazz.
Yeah.
Jazz and instrumental pop. But it's great.
Yeah, dreamy stuff.
Mm. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Oh, it's so hard to pick favorites.
Yeah.
I'd say my favorite track is probably Greatest Blue, just because it fits so much into 6 minutes. It really has a little bit of everything.
Yeah, mine's Paradigm Shift.
Paradigm Shift. Yeah, okay.
It's just a swirling synth in the middle.
Yeah, that's
the
nice.
Drums catch up to that, and it just, oh my god, just so much.
Yeah, we picked the two longer songs actually. Yeah, because those are the two that have enough breathing room to kind of go into lots of different places, whereas for the rest of the tracks are kind of usually more one idea per song. But yeah, that's I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, a 9 I think is reasonable.
It's really good.
Just fucking yeah,
it's for what it is. It's almost unimpeachable,
and all their stuff is at this level. I
really
think, like, go back, an album is just as good.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely check out that covers album, because that's really exciting.
Yeah, it does some interesting things.
Yeah. So that's Fox Capture Plan. Uh-huh. From Japan. Alright, last Fox band of the day. We're going to talk about an EP from a band from Bristol called Foxjaw. These guys spell it with a PH, so it's Phoxjaw. I believe the EP is called Goodbye Dinosaur.
Goodbye Dinosaur.
Goodbye Dinosaur. So it's their very first release, and I discovered these guys because Black Peaks took them out on tour. And Black Peaks have a habit of taking great bands out on tour. Tusky is one, Gold Key is another, Baylor, a great Irish band, is another. So when I saw they were, you know, Foxjaw on a bill, I sort of said, I wonder what these guys are like. And surprise, surprise, they're great.
Yeah.
So
Dynamite.
What bands sort of came to mind when you were listening to Goodbye Dinosaur?
Probably Alice in Chains.
Oh, yeah.
But with even heavier guitars. More in the guitar department.
Mm.
It has that chugging, apocalyptic sensibility that they have.
Definitely.
In their modern albums, at least.
At its lightest, I hear, you know, Queens of the Stone Age and even little sprinklings of things like Dismemberment Plan, Texas is the Reason. But then at its heaviest, there's bits of Meshuggah, bits of Mastodon, a lot of Deftones in there as well. Mm-hmm. It's just a really, really eclectic mix of styles
in a very short amount of time.
But all of it's all centered around these just hulking massive riffs that are, I can hardly think of how they could have been produced better, the guitars on this album. They really squash your head in the best possible way.
Yeah, like a claustrophobic kind of feeling, but in a good way.
Yeah. Well, that's because it's not relentless. That's sometimes my issue, is like it comes relentless, whereas like Triceratops is a perfect example. You know, the riff comes in, kicks your ass, and then it sort of floats away into this sort of, you know, baked desert feel with totally clean vocals. Like the vocalist on this, I'll just find out his name. It's Danny Garland, I think is his name.
He does a lot.
Yeah, he does a lot. He does everything from, you know, pretty, you know, a lot of personality in his clean vocal, but you
spoken
know,
word kind of
spoken word, exactly right. And obviously then there's he's got a sort of a gritty bellow and then a proper scream that he just uses, you know, a few times.
The full package.
Yeah, he's you know, a, he's a all full you package.
Want. Yeah,
100%, man.
Yeah.
Great choruses too, isn't it?
Oh, really good choruses. Mm-hmm. I think the choruses are the thing you come to this album for.
Yeah.
And I say it feels like an album more than it feels like an EP.
Yeah,
it like starts with an intro track to get you into it.
Yeah.
And then you know they mean shit when they have an intro track for an EP.
No, it really does feel like an album squashed into 20 minutes or whatever, cuz you're right, cuz it starts with like the lead single Triceratops, just a world-beating single that I can't imagine anyone who's not into guitar music won't like. It's just such a great song, and it's got the three elements. It's got the huge riff, the melodic verse, and then the massive sort of Deftones-y chorus.
Yeah, an eerie vibe.
Yeah,
minor but sounding major at points. It's odd.
Like, yeah, that's your Triceratops. That's your ultimate back. Like it kind of drifts from major to minor, which is in a really cool way. Weapons again is the one you're talking about, the spoken word.
Yeah,
like heavy as fuck, but then also fragile and feather light and floaty.
These are shock value mode changes.
Yeah,
that everybody loves.
Yeah, Dinosaur Bones is kind of the ballad. I've said it sounds like a hip swinging carnival at the end of the world. Which I stand by.
Yes, it does. That's accurate.
And then there's even that sort of modern Brit rock sort of Black Foxes style.
Yeah, a bit of Black Foxes
flourishes in the middle eight.
Yeah, that was okay for me.
Oh man,
I know you love it. But
I love
like,
it.
I'm like, yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, this is surprising. Yeah, I know you love it.
Yeah, and then they bring the sludge on that last track.
They do.
Plastic Wedding.
Doomy.
Real doomy. Mm-hmm. Real doomy, and almost. Every Time I Die territory with when the riff really kicks in, it's very nice. There's just obviously these guys are big fans of a nice sort of wide selection.
They can pick and choose whenever they please, which is great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's like you know, and like we were saying before with Foxing. This is a British band who are taking a lot of American influences and mixing them up in a blender in a way that's great. I think it sometimes it's hard to escape your musical culture. So I love when bands give a fresh perspective to old sounds. And and that's kind of what's happening here. It's a lot of grunge.
Oh, it's exciting.
A lot of detuned, you know, heavy, proggy bands.
Like C sharp tuned guitars.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think at least.
Yeah. But then clearly they've also grown up with a lot of bands from the emo scene and sort of post-hardcore and those influences are there as well, and it all just works together really nicely with a singer who can glue it all together.
Yeah. If they were a bit selfish and just stuck with one genre, I don't think I would have liked this as much.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, because I've
you could all easily those bands fall into that. Right?
You could easily fall into that. I think I've had ups and downs with a lot of the touchstones that we've mentioned, but these guys, they kind of take the best of them all and blend them seamlessly.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for whatever they do next.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I want a full album now.
Really, really.
Take your time, please. I want it to be good, but like, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been this, you know, as far as a very, very first release, we don't cover that many of them. Usually we're covering, you know, a debut album that's come, even Mal, like that was, you know, they'd already had an EP or two.
Or Vukovi, it was like they have four EPs beforehand.
Yeah, right, Vukovi's another example. It's very, very rare to hear a band that's this polished and, what would you say, like kind of a single minded or like or they have a very they've such a well
focused
put together sound.
They're laser focused
on EP1.
Mm.
So that's that bodes very well for the future.
I would love to see them do something entirely different for EP2. That would be amazing.
Well, I've heard they previously did a much more Caius influenced sort of straight ahead desert rock thing, so
they like a whole lot more than just what you see here, which is even better. Like,
yeah, so I think this EP represents even a progression from what they had been playing live when they just started out. They're very exciting. Ones to watch for 2019, no question about it. So I'm glad I brought this to the show.
Oh, thank
favorite
you.
Track?
Tough one. Very tough one. They're
it is tough
really
one.
Good. Oh, fuck, dude. I think Dinosaur Bones.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Dinosaur Bones. I'm going to take Triceratops. I just can't get that line out of my head. Your Triceratops left three holes in my back. It's a great line. I'm going to give it an... eight.
Nine.
Good.
Nine.
Choice. Nine. All right. Brilliant stuff from Foxjaw.
Yes.
That's called Goodbye Dinosaur. It's like a 20-minute EP. Definitely check it out. It's excellent. All right. Speaking of EPs, or do you want to talk about an album? Let's talk about an EP.
Yeah.
Mix it up. A Fire Inside, AFI.
Yeah.
From California. AFI.
Do
you know this is their seventh EP?
I know.
They have a lot of EPs.
They do. They started out with a lot of kind of breaks. It's a good way to break up.
Yeah. So it's called it's called The Missing Man. And as I say, it's their seventh EP. Five tracks?
Yes.
Five tracks. Which is the appropriate length for an EP, I think. What are AFI doing on this album apart from just filling the gap between the Blood album and whatever comes next? Because I think they are doing something different.
Well, yeah. The good thing about filling the gap is that they give this an they take this as an opportunity to test out new things. You know,
yes,
different production styles, more bare bones features, but just testing out things they haven't really done before in a full album scope, but making it seem pretty cohesive all the way through.
Yeah,
as if an album would, you know.
Yeah, it definitely has the pacing of an album, no question. It's, you know, it kind of starts with your sort of hands in the air banger that's Trash Bat.
Yeah,
one of my favorite AFI songs, actually. I honestly love it.
I honestly think so. Yeah.
It's got really...
It does so much in 2 minutes and 7 seconds, right?
Yeah, or and it's something. Instantly, like, you know, you'll be humming that once more with this man. Like, that just instantly hooks onto your brain.
Yeah, it's like a pre-chorus that's attached to the chorus, and they just move in and out of each other really fast because it's such a fast song.
Yeah.
Then it's got, like, a very quick verse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then, like, a really quick but satisfying kind of acoustic finger-picked element near the end.
That's right.
Which I love so much because it doesn't sound like it's out of nowhere. It sounds like it's taking the energy from what you hear in the rest of the song. Is kind of
It's really densely packed. And you're right. It does a very odd thing of blasting straight into the chorus, and then for the second repetition of the chorus, it does sort of a build up.
We've done that.
Yeah. Well, we've done that. But AFI. They copying us, clearly.
Yes.
But yeah, the production on that one is just pitch perfect. It's wiry, but it's super, super clear. Kind of hard. It's just a distillation of horror punk, the sort of style they've become known for.
Yes.
In two and a half minutes, whatever it is. Elsewhere, I think there's big successes. There's slightly less successful elements. Really, my only gripe with it as a whole is they've kind of made an odd choice, because Davey Havok is a great, great singer, and they seem to have
pushed him in the back a little bit.
But they've also seemed to have sort of pitch corrected him a little bit, especially on Break Angels, the second track.
I think this is just to fix a few things. I mean, if you're doing an EP, you don't have all the time in the world.
Yeah, I wonder, is that what happened?
And you just want to get some things over the line.
Because I was listening back to the Blood album a little bit, and there's that first song, Snowcats, the first song.
Yes, I think so.
They kind of mess around with that vocoder thing at the end of that song as well. And I was kind of wondering, is that like a stylistic choice?
Yeah, I think it is. You know,
it feels weird to have
They've done that for quite a bit through their more poppy side.
And that's
like,
fine.
From Miss Murder onwards.
It's a really, really good song. It's kind of halfway towards a ballad, I guess.
Like, his clean vocals have only been getting better.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't do the roars too much anymore.
Oh no,
the Miss Murder kind of.
Oh yeah, I didn't actually realize. I hadn't heard Miss Murder for a long time, put it that way.
Or even like before that, there was huge like sludgy punk.
So I was
jams.
Really surprised actually listening to that song when I heard him scream. But
he's a smart vocalist.
No, he is.
You know,
it just sounded a little like, especially on that song Break Angels, that they kind of ironed out a lot of the individuality that I like so much about his voice. But it's not an issue.
I do love the song, though. It's nice.
Oh, it's a great song. I like it, too.
Mid-tempo, kind of.
It's almost like what it would be like if 30 Seconds to Mars were good.
Yeah, which they were once. first album.
Well, if they were still good, then.
Yeah.
I don't know their stuff that well. But it has that vibe of, you know, it's definitely a stadium kind of stadium rock song. And then they seem to really try and dip into emo sort of territory with Back Into the Sun, which I really like.
Yeah, is that the one with the huge solo?
Get
Dark is a huge solo. Sorry,
but a lot of them have huge solos.
But like absolute wankery in the solos, yeah. Which is totally not a thing that this kind of band does.
Jade felt like he kind of had carte blanche to just wank all over this album in a great way, because he's got like two or three gut-busting solos, and the one on that track, Back Into the Sun, is sort of a Weezer style. It really reminded me of what Rivers Cuomo does with a lot of his solos.
Yeah.
But matched with a sort of early Foo Fighters meets Sunny Day Real Estate type, you know, emo anthem, which is great. Yeah, it's really, really good. Mm. And again, not something I would ever have expected from AFI.
Missing Man,
yeah. Nice little chill way to end, I guess.
Yeah.
At the end of the EP.
It's an interesting one. I don't think I like it as much as most people.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it.
No, it's fine. You know, I never expected to be talking about Led Zeppelin or Cat Stevens.
No, definitely Cat Stevens all the way. Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
But I think, what's the name of the drummer? Adam Carson does an excellent job of driving the verse along there. There's lots of open hats and kind of...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it's really like groovy drums for such a... what could have been a pretty bland ballad at the end there. Yeah. But no, I think it's great. And then there's the violin comes in as well, which adds another texture to that track.
I think my only gripe is the production is not as good as the albums, but it's an EP, you know. They're not always...
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I don't...
different. What is it? Do you hear...
I think it's clear. I think the production is what it needs to be.
Well, coming from Miss Murder, which had the most... Or what was it called again?
Suffocate Now. Songs for Suffering. Sing the Suffer? Sing the Silence?
Sing the Silence, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it, but that had such a pristine...
Yeah.
Kind of like what Daring Gray did with Ouroboros. Okay. Where they hit such a high point with the production.
Yeah.
Everything else has to be, you know, you can't always rely on the same producer, you know?
No, I know, yeah. Yeah, so I work out that same thing. I'm like, just work with Jens Bogren every time, and they stop working with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I have no issue with the production. My only question is just, you know, is...
December Underground, sorry, yeah.
Oh, December Underground, yeah. Sorry. What's the one I'm thinking of? Sing the Sorrow, I think it's called, right?
Yeah.
It might not be on Spotify, but no, it is Sing the Sorrow. Yeah. No, yes. My only issue is on the production on some of the vocals. I just don't know if it's really over-aggressive chorus work or if it's actually pitch correction, but either way, I'm not sure it 100% hits the mark on that second track. But apart from that, I think it's really, really good.
Accidental as well. Sometimes you have to be aware of how it sounds elsewhere.
Yeah, it could be. I think it's really good. I think my favorite track is probably, just because it's very experimental, I would say probably Back Into the Sun.
Yeah. I think Trashpat for me.
Trashpat is great too. Okay, cool. I'm going to give it an 8.
8, yeah. 8.
8 is great.
Yeah.
So there's a reason. It's like not even a surprise when we like these, because we picked them out of 2018 for a reason to bring to the show. But
and of course we missed some EPs that came over later last time, like some bands that are no longer with us that have ended on great EP.
Arcane Roots? Or who are you thinking of?
Who am I thinking of? I'm thinking Minus the Bear.
Oh yeah.
And then there was another one, Big Jesus.
Oh, I'm so annoyed about Big Jesus.
That was like August. This was just recently though. So.
Yeah, that really sucked, because it almost felt like the announcement that they were basically calling it a day came like 4 weeks after the EP came out, something like that.
Yeah, basically.
That was a real shame. I like that EP too.
Yeah, it totally changed the face of their band.
Totally.
Right at the end point, so go figure.
Yeah. I kind of feel bad actually too, because the guy from Big Jesus sort of said, please help me get this merch out of my sitting room. Everything's going cheap, but the shipping is so expensive to Ireland.
It is.
It's like you're giving, you know, maybe a quarter of the price of what you're paying to the actual artist, but we'll see. I might still pick up a couple of things because I like Big Jesus.
Yeah.
We've got one more to talk about, I think, before we go to our time machine.
We do, and this is the latest one of last year from
me.
This was, if not a few days after we finished our Top 20.
C2I.
Yes, C2I.
From Scotland by way of Myanmar.
Yes.
So here's the thing about C2I. You don't release an album on the 18th of December, dude. Just have to get that out of my system there now, because, you know, and I'm saying that as much for him as I am for myself. You're asking people to overlook your record.
maybe.
You are.
Yeah. I mean, the fans don't. The fans get it.
Yeah. Maybe that's a good place to start, too, because I kind of feel like C2Y is definitely an artist that is making music for himself and his fans. There's no sense of, like, reaching out to the mainstream or to the music press. He doesn't get any help from them. They have no interest in him. It feels like it's very self-contained.
Yeah, he kind of... It's one of the most ultimate DIY guitar just roller coasters of a band. Like
he's... I don't mean this in a disparaging way, I think he... Like, C2Y's music is... It's just not the kind of thing that ever has been or ever will be considered trendy. Do you know? It's even when djent was a thing, this kind of like really optimistic, happy, progressive metal is just...
I mean, we like some of the bands that kind of dwell in this realm that are they've slightly branched out, like Strawberry Girls.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, Disperse would be the one that I brought to the show.
Yeah, Disperse, Strawberry Girls. A lot
Animals
of the,
as leaders,
yeah,
but they're
a lot of the YouTube guitarists as well. Like really well known ones.
Pliny is kind of the main touch point.
He's the guy who's really branched out.
Yeah,
to have his own tour almost.
Yes.
But this is great. I love. Off the bat, I fucking love what he does on this album.
Yeah.
Once again, with just kind of the same template, how much he can change it up in this.
Yeah.
How much dimension he can give what he has.
Right, because
he's just himself. Like he programs the drums himself. That's all him.
Yeah, I know.
Which is nuts. I program drums and I can't even comprehend what he does.
How he does it.
Yeah.
This, if nothing else, and it is more than this, but it really is a stunning showcase for Superior Drummer, for whatever company makes that program. Like, there's a song, I think it's Homebound, where there's a really textured snare roll.
Natural turns of phrase.
Yeah, like
with the other instruments.
The snare, it really goes from like a whisper, and it gets more and more intense, and it really sounds like a human in a room, and he's done all that through, I guess, like it's MIDI 2 or something. But yeah, maybe. Superior Drummer is a really incredible program. But just talk about the music a little bit. I think this is billed maybe a little bit misleadingly as progressive metal or djent or whatever. Like people say, oh, like if you like Periphery, if you like Intervals, you like this. I think it's really more a case of if you like Steve Vai and Joe Satriani and John Petrucci solo stuff, you like this. But it sits in that Guitar Hero zone. Like this is definitely... man wearing sunglasses standing on a snow-capped mountain just shredding his guitar into a bear's face. I get that sense from it. That's not a bad thing.
No.
You just have to be in the mood for it.
It's some of the most memorable catchy stuff of anybody who's done that in the last decade.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he starts off in it's the very, very start of it on Lost in the Space Sauce, which, it's all very spacey. But it starts off like almost like a Monster Cat album or something. It's got that an EDM feel to it.
It's thematic. It's cool. I love when solo guitarists kind of do that.
And I think a lot of the really shining moments in this album are actually in the details that are around the songs. When he really focuses on the backing guitars and that sort of thing.
Backing guitars and what they do and what they can bring to like build up certain parts and like bring out, and like I think Runway Reaction is the perfect example of that.
Yep.
Because that's a great thing of like bringing in the main lick to start, which is like a brilliant kind of solo-y meets chords that Strawberry Girls do a lot.
Yes, that's who I was trying to think of. I wrote down American Football and Redneck Manifesto. You're right. It's much more Strawberry Girls. It's real turbocharged pop.
Yeah, kind of a nice, fast-paced boogie to it, which is really cool.
It's Strawberry Girls I was trying to think of there. Yep, well done. Yep.
Yeah, it's just double-time fun. Like,
it's nice.
It's just very rhythmically... It's very dancey as well. That's one thing that a lot of solo guitarists don't really do too much. Maybe Joe Satriani... This is like really dancey as well, you know?
Yeah, those are the moments. It's actually when he breaks away from the formula. That's one of the moments. I think Footsteps is another one because it really has that super engineered that doom, 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 digga, doom, 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 doom. Like that's that before the lead guitar even comes in, you're already hooked.
Yeah.
So when it does, it even has even more impacts. I love that song. Yeah, that's definitely the best sort of quote-unquote like gent moment on the record. Like, it's the best tech metal moment.
Galaxies Collide at the end combines everything. Really, yeah. Like all the slow, spacey, cliffside elements. Yeah. and just grows in it.
But there's real... Yeah. The difference about that song is that there's real sort of grit and grime to the guitars. Bit. Like, it's got more of a metalcore feel to it, especially at the start.
It does get really heavy at points. There are certain elements.
Yeah. I really like that. So I actually, my favorite moments of this album are the moments where he's like really breezy and tropical, like on Runway Reactions, and then on and then when he gets really down in the boots and kind of gritty and aggressive on that song Galaxies Collide. Also just a really goofy moment that I love. I think it's I think it's Journey. Yeah, because Journey, as the name would suggest, goes from, it really starts as like a little kernel of sort of Monuments to Masses, Vasudeva, and then it builds and builds and builds all the way up to this nuts sort of Celtic folk horselip style.
It does.
It's almost like Irish trad. That's really lick.
Thin Lizzy elements.
Yeah, Thin Lizzy or
Black Star Riders, I guess they are now, but yeah.
Or maybe even like a Monomarth or one of those bands that leans on Scandinavian folk, but it definitely has like a folk feel to it, which is really excellent. This whole song feels like it's building towards something, whereas I think, like, especially towards the start of the album, there can be like, it does to me feel a little bit like somebody just endlessly wanking over with a guitar, whereas I think that song Journey, like it kind of feels like you're working towards something, which is great.
A lot of these songs have that feeling.
A lot of them do. Yes, definitely.
Even Homebound as well, which is kind of a Devin Townsend transcendence.
Yes,
and a swirling thing. It's good. It's a build up to the end song, basically.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Grand Order as well. I mentioned John Petrucci. I think as well, whatever he's programming the drums really reminds me of Mark Portnoy. Lots of Awake era insane fill, like tom fills filling the gaps, which is really nice. That, and then it also sounds a little bit like an anime battle theme, but I think he's a big fan.
He's got two
EPs called the Senpai EPs,
which my god, he got there first, so
well, that's enough said. But yeah, no, he's, you know, he's clearly a stupidly talented guy. There's no question about it.
And like, if I didn't love his stuff more before, I really do now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
I didn't realize how much of a theme there was to his output. Like, it's got like, he's got like Cassini, and then what's the next album called? It's called like Outward Journey or something. They're all space themed. Set Course for Andromeda.
Yeah.
This is obviously album is called Homebound.
He did a fifth anniversary remaster of Cassini, which is so interesting.
Fifth anniversary.
I guess that makes sense if you're like a homestead.
Yeah.
Programmer producer, you'll release and then you'll be like, if I had more time, I could have really tuned that.
Well, that's the thing.
Don't get with big productions.
He's doing it all in his room. So obviously, he just picked up recording techniques that he didn't have access to, or he learned and he went back and just said, "I'm going to clean this up." Oliver Arnold did the same thing with his first album. It's like, this guy's only 28, you know, which is insane to me and makes me feel terrible.
Yeah, a couple years, 1 year.
Right.
Shit.
Exactly. He's stupidly prolific, and it's those moments of progression that I hear in this album that really excite me. It's those three or four tracks that seem to push what he does. Like, if you listen back to Cassini and tracks in the, you know, there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn to stuff on Homebound, I think.
Yeah.
But it's the moments, like what we were saying with the Pliny EP, it's the moments when he pushes things in another direction that get me excited.
There's quite a few. Like, every there second are. Song is literally that, to change it up a bit. And it's really special. I quite like it a lot more than I thought I would, you know?
I like it more than I thought I would. I don't like it a lot more than, like, it doesn't surprise me quite to the same extent that...
But it's thoroughly enjoyable.
It is enjoyable. Solid. No question about it. It is very enjoyable.
Like, I don't tire of it as much as I would or expect to, you know?
Mm. I think I will go back to it, definitely. Sparingly. It depends. I have to be really in the mood for that, as I say, like, that style of major key... really kind of hopeful, optimistic. I know that makes me sound like a miserable bastard. Oh, but that's because I am.
Yeah, it's true.
It's because I am. So,
hello, pot.
Yeah. It is. It's good. It's a good record. I'm my favorite song, I think. probably Footsteps. Just obsessed with that riff. I think it's great.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I mean, whatever reminds me of, what's the song? Double Helix, he did.
Oh, okay.
That was like the pinnacle of this, like, guitar virtuoso production.
Yeah.
Like, the best produced ever.
Okay, all right.
So, like, Runway Reaction reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah. That's a great song, too.
Yeah, that's the one.
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Give it a 9.
Oh, nine. Snap.
Give it a 9.
All righty. Great stuff. So it's C2I and the album's called Homebound.
You would have been in my top 20.
Oh.
You would have.
I could say the same for Foxing. I would have made space for that.
And actually, maybe Fox Capture Plan to an extent. I mean, a lot of them are.
I was surprised that wasn't actually in yours. Did you come to that one a little late?
I think Mouse and the Keys took up the runner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, all right. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. All right. That is it for sort of 2018 releases. So that's done and dusted, huh? 2018, what a year that we could do our you know, however many episodes we did, like 25 episodes, our top 20 special, and then there were still, you know, 5 great releases just to talk about
in the intermission.
Yeah, absolutely. Which you know, it was a really, really special year.
It was.
I think we're gonna talk about it 2018 quite fondly.
And what better than finding an album that no one else can really find?
Yeah, right. So that's
for our last.
Let's hop back in our time machine and dial in 1997 and talk about a band called Lusk. So Lusk come to me courtesy of a fella I met through Kelly Scott's Twitter.
Yeah.
Kelly Scott has, you know, the drummer from Failure, has very kindly, I suppose, given us a shout out because we've given him a shout out as far as Failure is concerned, and a lot of sort of Failure adjacent projects. And a guy called Mike, who found me through a tweet that Kelly did, sort of asked me, well, what did I think of the Lusk album? And I said, the what album? Sorry, the who now?
This one.
Yeah. And so it turns out that this album is a little bit of a lost album. I wouldn't say totally lost, but its CD is very hard to find, and the vinyl might only have been a promo pressing, so it's nearly impossible to find.
Yeah. Modern streaming platforms don't lend nicely to that kind of music scene. You know, there's a lot of 90s stuff.
There's a lot of 90s. As I'm discovering, there's a lot of stuff from the mid to late 90s that is like just on defunct labels.
Like, this is as defunct as, I don't know, my dad's album is.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It exists.
You have it, but anyway, the album's called Free Mars. Believe it or not, it actually got a Grammy Award nomination for Best Recording Package.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
I can totally believe that.
So, yeah. So, it came at the time with a little bit of fanfare. It was considered a supergroup. It had Paul D'Amour, who was the original bass player in Tool.
Yes.
He played on Undertow.
And the EP, the Opiate EP, I believe?
Yes, he did. And it also features, it's kind of really a bit of a double act between Paul D'Amour and Chris Pittman, who was best known as Keys for Guns N' Roses. He played live keyboards for them.
That's awesome.
He was also in The Replicants with like Ken Andrews and Greg Edwards and a couple other guys. It's like a covers band, basically.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
a glorified covers band.
I know that. Yeah.
Greg Edwards, bass player, slash guitar player, basically one of the three guys in Failure. And Brad Lehner, who is from a shoegaze band called Medicine. And then Kelly Scott did also do some session drumming on this album too. He's not one of the like four main guys, but he was involved.
You
in
can
the
hear it.
You can. You
I can actually hear it. Yeah.
I think Paul provided the majority of the lead vocals, so it's not as I was kind of hoping it would be a little bit of a Greg Edwards project as far as vocals is concerned, because I love Autolux vocals. But
yes.
I think Paul does a really, really good job here. So I suppose to start, where musically do you think Lusk sits? Is it a Failure album?
For one song.
Oh, for one. Oh, and I know which song it is too. Is it Tell Me the Song?
Give me a sec, dude.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm sure I will
agree.
Is it
Mind Ray?
No, I think
it's somewhere there.
I think
it's midsection.
I'm sure it's Gold. It's got to be Gold. The third song.
Gold. But there is an element where the guitar kind of appears.
Yeah.
And is that kind of inverted high chord we always do.
That we do, yeah.
And thusly they always do. And
yeah. Which surprised me, of course, because it was largely Paul and Chris that composed and arranged this album. But yeah, sorry, it's got it.
But this is more on the far side of the music spectrum with like...
Far side of the moon.
Yeah, with them, of course. but not just them, obviously. More Beatles-centric.
Yeah.
Mixed with Oingo Boingo, if you could believe.
Oh, yeah,
the very last album of Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, I hear that.
Was kind of...
Oh, Boingo?
Yeah. Was kind of zany and more hard, bluesy.
Yeah.
it just, I don't know, it had an automatic connection to it. I don't know why. I wonder if they did.
Yeah. I dug up an old article from 1997 that MTV did, funnily enough, when they were still a music journalism outfit. And their quote was, "It sounds like the Beach Boys, Pink Floyd, and the Beatles jamming together in 1969.
Thoroughly. Which, quite thoroughly.
Yeah. Like, those are the three main influences.
But with some very, very modern elements.
Yes.
Like, some of the synths do not sound like 90s synths.
No.
Or, you know, like the first song, Backworlds.
Backworlds,
has that weird kind of,
I would say,
odd element of a synth.
That thing. Because I would associate that more with, weirdly enough, with Dismemberment Plan, particularly on The City. I think, oh no, the what's that album called? Something and I. Anyway, whatever it's called. The one with the weird vector graphics on the front. I really associate with that album. And that came maybe like a year or two later.
Okay, but regardless.
Hyper modern for 1997, yeah, definitely.
Freaking unusual. And this album is a trip, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
A good trip.
Yeah. Yeah. That first song is the most, I think, the most sort of stereotypically, because most of the songs really pull liberally from 60s and 70s, but I think that song has the most 90s going on, especially at the end, you know, when it kind of almost goes a little Red Hot Chili Peppers with the guitar.
Yeah, it does.
And a little sort of maybe like the ballad on a skate punk album or something, and then it goes back into psychedelia after that.
Yeah, there's a lot of psychedelia.
Yeah, most definitely.
The album cover is quite invocative of, like, exactly what you'd expect.
Say, it's similar enough to
the Metropolis kind of feel.
Bioshock.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got that Art Deco look. I suppose the same thing that Smashing Pumpkins were going with on
Tonight.
Just the artwork for the new album.
Yeah.
Similar kind of thing. Ayn Rand, the Fountainhead, that sort of style.
I believe that kind of clean guitar element with a bit of crunch was very popular back then.
Yeah.
And it seems to carry on with this as well, which I fucking enjoy, dude.
Yeah, yeah, good.
There's swells of it everywhere.
There really is. And funnily enough, this album was, I guess, a little contemporaneous with Britrock movement, but
with Savvy Kangaroos.
Yeah,
certainly that.
Definitely. And the Hotel Family Affair was the one in particular that jumped out to me as being quite similar to maybe Blur or Pulp.
Yeah.
But actually they sort of swore up and down that they had no interest at all in, at the time anyway, in those bands like Oasis and Blur and Pulp, and
it's definitely not as present.
No, but, and that's not to say that they necessarily did. I'm not saying calling them liars.
No.
It's just
no.
Those were the influences that were in the air at the time. Like, those bands were influenced by the 1960s, so were Lusk. So, you know, it's possible to end up with a similar enough product, even if you haven't listened to those other contemporaries, basically.
Like, I could compare this, I could call this, like, White Album 0.2. all I like, but, you know, I think it's more than that, you know?
I would definitely say it's closer to Sgt. Pepper 0.2.
Okay.
It's weird. Yeah. It almost takes the themes of songs like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, and...
But darker.
Day in the Life. But darker, but also more like a commit harder to those sounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only band I think as a whole it sounds similar to is probably Mercury Rev.
I don't know that.
Oh man, we got to do that on our time machine some week. Nice. Mercury Rev write these amazing, like, psychedelic lullabies, basically. They're, you know, just a great band. And this, yeah, and especially on songs like Kill the King, towards the end when it goes really chill. I think Kill the King also has a bit of a grunge influence on it. It does a little bit of Soundgarden or something. But towards the end when it gets into my Good Fishwife, yeah. It does have that light, airy, weird, like sort of funhouse mirror lullaby feel to it.
Yeah, the Boingo Elements.
Elements.
I think that was 2 years before, so.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. All right, fair
enough.
It's
just the zeitgeist to sound like it, you know.
Yeah.
Which I love, dude.
Yeah, and it has all of those hallmarks of a 90s album, too. Like the song, I think it's Doctor, ends with the harpist sort of talking to the band and going, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want me to keep going?" And
oh yeah, what's
oh that? No, and she's like laughing, and
it's very funny.
They're having a weird moment.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love having that. Like, I don't know why bands don't do that more often. I guess we're not recording everything, so
yeah. It's funny. We've kind of gone back now with streaming and the rise of sort of the resurgence of vinyl. I think bands, you know, bands were inclined to throw the kitchen sink at albums and add in all those little details and flourishes.
Here's a hidden track kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. It's like, there's a hidden track.
Yeah. I mean, the last time I experienced that was actually with the latest Garbage album I got on vinyl just over Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's a hidden track?
I was like, oh, three sides. What about the fourth side?
Oh.
And the fourth side of this gorgeous looking, like, tiger print vinyl.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's just a song. There's a song uncredited.
Wow.
On anything. It's just there. And it's really fucking good.
Is it on the CD or the streaming version?
No.
Really?
No. Totally exclusive.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Never knew it existed.
That is interesting.
So this reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, as far as hidden tracks go, I like the Nirvana one. I like the Jawbox did one as a cover.
Yeah.
I think the Korn one cover is okay. This one wouldn't be up there for me. It's very long.
It's 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's mostly electronic blips and bloops with kind of creepy spoken word.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, where are we gonna hide the body? Where's the body? Blah 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 blah. It's fine. Yeah. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Terrifying if on any drugs.
Depending. I've read reports of people tripping balls to this album.
Shrooms to this album. And it gets really just expansive and progressive with its midsection songs, you know?
Yeah.
Like Hotel Family Affair
is
wacky, wild, catchy.
Yeah.
Totally Sgt. Pepper's love.
And I love the kind of oompa type vibe that's in Free Mars, the title track, that... all of us like there's something about it you know, it really shouldn't work. I think it was, if it was created by lesser musicians, it wouldn't work for me, but because they just know what they're doing and they're obviously real fans of the type of music they're playing, that it really works.
It's the kind of worship you want to hear from already established musicians.
Exactly, you know? Yeah, and it was funny as well, because I remember, like, MTV took pains to sort of clarify, this is nothing like Tool, because everybody expected it to be...
Yeah.
So, you know, you and I, obviously, coming at it from the Failure angle, expected it to sound like Failure, which at points sounds a tiny bit like Failure, but, you know, if you were coming at this from Undertow or Opiate, is that the name of the EP?
Yeah.
I mean, this would be a complete curveball, but it's excellent. I think it's a real nice hidden gem. I'm kind of glad.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Paul Gilmore has done recently. I think he did something recently with the supergroup kind of thing. I'll have to check. Yeah. But yeah, his staple is all over this.
Yeah.
Like, if you get to know him more as a musician, and I love that. It has everybody's personality on it.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
What's your favorite track?
God, that's a hard one. I mean, it's a toss-up between Backworlds.
Yeah, it's a great song.
And Mindray.
Ooh, I like Mindray too.
Black Sea Me is good as well.
Yeah, that one, that's kind of those two songs kind of bleed together, don't they?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Hotel Family and Black Sea Me kind of bleed together. Mm-hmm. Under Garden's really nice too. It's so creepy.
Yeah.
It's just got a real ominous vibe to it.
I love it when it gets creepy. It's like what I've always wanted from the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of that here. I love the title track. That Free Mars, I think, it's a real journey of a song. It's quite long too. It's like nearly 6 minutes long.
Mm-hmm, it is.
These songs, they take their time. They breathe. You know, it's a bit of a, like, the album is a commitment to listen to. How long is it? Do you have the runtime there?
I can do some maths.
No,
it's probably pretty.
I think it's like the guts of an hour, definitely.
Yeah, an hour-ish.
Yeah, but it's well worth your time. And if you do want to listen to it, a lot of the songs are on YouTube. I think I have Kelly Scott's permission to say this, because nobody involved in that project is making any money from it now that it's basically a collector's item and it's not available because Volcano Records or whatever label put it out has since folded. So if you do want to listen to it, DM us. We're at Kill Shuffle on Twitter, and you know, we'll find a way for you to listen to this album if you want to.
Yeah, through the airwaves.
Somewhere. Yeah, because that's how it kind of came to me.
It's transported to you with Morse code.
Yes.
Enjoy it that way.
And if it becomes available once again on legal streaming services and stuff like that, we'll let you know. But
oh my god, a vinyl of this.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I mean, imagine if there was a reissue. This would be the perfect thing for a bright young label to try and get the rights to, because
absolutely
this deserves a bigger platform. I think it's great.
Yeah.
There's another album actually that got sent to me in the same week that I want to show you.
Ooh,
too.
Excited.
But yeah, we might do it some week, or I might just show you privately. But in any case, Lusk, Free Mars. We've kind of given you the touch points. It's a lot of 60s psychedelia, but
yeah,
filtered through the late 90s, which, what more could you ask for?
No, nothing more.
It's good. All right, thanks so much for listening. This has been the very first Kill Shuffle of 2019, as we say. New year, same show.
Same us.
As always, you can find us at Kill Shuffle on Twitter, search Kill Shuffle on Facebook, or search Kill Shuffle on Spotify, and you'll find our top 20 albums of the year playlist. You'll find our regular playlist we use to do research for the show, so all of the albums we cover are on there. And you can also follow myself and Dylan individually on Twitter if you want to. So until next time,